Good evening. It is a great schus for us to have Rabbi Rizkin with us. I thank Neil Stein for all of his efforts in putting the evening together. And I thank Rabbi Rizkin for all that he has done for the Jewish people over all the years. Sometimes it's like irrelevant to say bio, like the bio everybody knows, but I'll say a little bit of bio anyway. He's a founding rabbi of Lincoln Square Synagogue. I was privileged in 1974 to speak there at Shal Shiv's Museum in Sora. In those days, internship was one Shabbos. And I know if I missed it once, I came to two and then I earned out my internship. So a little change from then. It was a great schuss, and I watched Rabbi Rizkin a little bit in action at that time, which I appreciate that. That was my first mini mentoring from the other side. Of course, he's the founding chief rabbi of the Israeli settlement of Efrat. So 120 good health. It's Hashem, right? Okay. Bezrat Hashem. Bezrat Hashem. That's all that matters. Bezrat Hashem. He was the dean of Manhattan Day School in New York, in New York City, but he is also the founder and chancellor of the Or Torah Stone Institutions, which, I mean, if you ask me, there, you know, you could try and match, like, which are the greatest achievements that he's achieved. It's very hard to, like, pick which is, but Or Torah Stone Institutions have graduates of there, I'll call them, have, both male and female, have spread their wings around the world. So that really, I think, is a great credit beyond the city of Efrat, beyond Lincoln Square, but many, many of us have been affected in different ways. Rabbi Rizkin also is a Kohen, so that's from birth. But we appreciate his being here. We appreciate the brachos, which he extends to us. We appreciate Divrei Torah, which he'll share with us this evening. It's really a great privilege for us to welcome Rabbi Shlomo Rizkin this evening, and we look forward to hearing what he has to say about Kedushas Har Habayis and what it means for us today, and many other things.
Kod Rav Ahmad Shlita, Moray v'Rabotai, Kehila Kedusha, it's truly a pleasure to be here. And actually, what I would like to do with you this evening is to talk about Har HaBayit, but within the broader context of Kedushat Eretz Yisrael and Kedushat Beit HaMikdash. Or Kedushat Eretz Yisrael and Kedushat Yerushalayim. Are they two different kinds of sanctities? Or are they really one sanctity? L'havdil Elef Havdolot, like Washington, D.C. is the capital of the United States. So Yerushalayim is the capital of Medinat Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. So it's the seat of government. But that does not necessarily mean that it has a separate degree of sanctity, a separate essence of sanctity. And if there are two sanctities, I would like to understand, I would like to try to define each of the two and understand where the difference lies. How many of you think that it's two sanctities? And how many think it's one? Okay. I am, Rabbi Hochberg, I'm sure this isn't representative vote because the majority don't think. So I'm sure that won't, that's not the case. But the question is, if it's two sanctities, why? Or if it's one sanctity, why? Give me some kind of proof, if you can. Any suggestions? Yes.
The boundaries of where Tumah and Tahara would take place. Inside, the Bar HaBayis would be one, you could be Tumah, you'd be outside. So that's two separate sanctities.
Good. 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 So that's certainly true in terms of Hilchot Tumah v'Tahara. It becomes very clear that it's two sanctities. And the fact that there are two separate brachot in Birkat HaMazon, Al Ha'aretz v'Al HaMazon, and Bonei Yerushalayim. And the fact that there are separate brachot within the Amidah for Eretz Yisrael and for Yerushalayim. And all of this would seem very clearly to point towards two separate sanctities. And that's correct. Wherein lies the distinction? How do I define the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael? And how do I define the sanctity of Yerushalayim? And along the way, I hope I will touch on many other issues about our ability to go up to Har HaBayit these days. About why the Torah, we just finished the Haldarei of Shavuot, why the revelation at Sinai was, the Midrash of Rabbi Ishmael says, the parousia, in a very open place, a wilderness, a no man's land. Wouldn't it have been much better had the Torah been given on the Har HaBayit, Yerushalayim? Was he even given an answer? What's the message that emanates from that? So let me try to define for you the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael first, and then the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. And I think we will understand. And then I'd like to read with you a text, learn with you a text. And you will also see the great genius of the Rambam and the way he can put everything together. Let's start with Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. Where in our tefillah, in our Amidah, do we actually see Kedushat Eretz Yisrael? Which bracha in the Amidah deals with Eretz Yisrael? Which bracha? If I could have a sitter, I would appreciate it. Oh, perfect. Right. Which bracha in the Amidah deals with Eretz Yisrael? We all say the Amidah three times a day. Which bracha deals with Eretz Yisrael? Pardon? Very, very good. That's not, however, the first bracha. Which is the first bracha? I'll come to that in a moment. Which is the first bracha that deals with Eretz Yisrael? Pardon? Baal Yisrael, that's before the Amidah. And that's Geula, really. Not Kedushat HaMakom. Pardon? Okay. Borech Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu et Hashana Hazot ve'et kol minei tvuatah v'tova ותן ברכה על פני האדמה V'sabeinu, Rav Soloveitchik insisted, mituvah. The only place which is called an Eretz Tovah is Eretz Yisrael. Mituvah enable us to be filled with the goodness of the produce of Eretz Yisrael. Uvarech shnatanu shnateinu kishanim hatovot. Bless our years like the good years. Baruch ato Hashem uvarech Hashem. But clearly, culminate vuatach the tova, sabeinu mituva, is talking about ta'aretz hatova asher natan lanu. That's the bracha of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a bracha for the nutrition which comes from the land. And I want to explain. Because if you look at Parshat Ekev, which is really a magnificent paean in praise of Eretz Yisrael, the song of Eretz Yisrael is a song of the land, its produce, and its natural resources. V'yachalta v'savata uverachta at Hashem Elokecha al ha'aretz hatova asher natan lach. When do you make that bracha? After you eat the food. And you don't thank God for the food, but you thank God for the land. Because it's the land which supplies you with the food. I want you to understand that from an historical perspective, the importance of a homeland was bound up with the fact that you would derive the sustenance to enable you to physically exist from the food that grew on the land. And during the 2,000 years when the Jewish people were in Galut, in most instances, the Jews were usurers, were moneylenders, or the Jews sailed the high seas and dealt with in the business of shmatis, you know that. And they were able to go from place to place, because there were Jews all over, and therefore they were able to be put up from place to place. But they didn't work in agriculture, which was the major profession of most of the people. And the reason was a very, very important reason. The owners of the land did not allow the stranger Jews to take from the produce of the land, because they were outsiders. They didn't own the land. They were not part of the land. They were not entitled to the fruit of the land. Land had its importance because it gave the people who lived in it the physical sustenance to be able to live. That's the fundamental kedusha of the land. We'll see it in a few moments in the Rambam, but it's called Eretz Yisrael, the land of the Jewish people. And the Ramban in the Tochacha and Kitavo says beautifully, magnificently, that this land only gives its produce to the Jews. There were many other people that usurped the land from us. Parsis, the Mamluks, the Turks, the Arabs. The land never produced for them. The nonsense about the Green Line. How did the Green Line come into being? Where the Jews lived, it was green. Where the Palestinians live, it was yellow. It was desiccated. The land only gave its produce historically to the Jewish people. I'll tell you this, a magnificent incident in modern Jewish history. When I made Aliyah in 1983, during the entire plane ride to Eretz Yisrael, every few moments I would go into the men's room and I would practice the Israeli rage, because I was very anxious to sound like an Israeli. This was true until I realized that the president of Israel at that time was Chaim Herzog. And he had a rage which was much more American sounding, it was actually Irish, than my rage was. And if he could become the president of Israel without pronouncing the Israeli rage, so I didn't have to worry so much about it. But when I first came, I was almost obsessed with it. Rabbis depend very much on their speaking, and therefore I felt I had to sound like an Israeli. I've never succeeded. And you could take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take the Brooklyn accent out of the boy. Such it is, and so it is. And now I speak Hebrew with a Brooklyn accent with pride. But I used to listen very much to the radio. I had more time then, in order to try to perfect my Hebrew and my accent as well. But the accent is at Kodesh Kalv. And I listened to a fascinating interview of Yaakov Chazan. Yaakov Chazan was the founder of Kibbutz Shomer HaTzair, socialist communist, and totally non-religious, maybe even anti-religious. His father, this is just an interesting point, was Harav Moshe Chazan, who was the major dayan in Brisk with Rav Chaim Brisker. The Brisker Rav, obviously, the grandfather of my Rebbe and many of our Rebbeim, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And that was, in general, a very special kehila, with Rav Chaim Brisker as the Rav, and Binyamin Begin, the father of Menachem Begin, as the Gabbai, and Moshe Chazan, the father of Yaakov Chazan, as the Dayan. And the grandmother of Arik Sharon as the Mialedet, the one who birthed all the children. That was the Kehila. Tremendous Jewish power. Anyway, the interviewer of Moshe Chazan, of Yaakov Chazan, and he was then in his 90s, did his homework. And he asked him, "How? From whence your Zionism? Because after all, you come from a non-Zionist family, the Brisker Rav. That was your home. How did you become a Zionist?" So he answered him with a very striking incident. He said that when he was 10, he became very weak. It was very difficult for him to walk, and he lost his appetite. And his father took him to a professor, to a doctor, and the doctor came to the conclusion that he was anemic. And there were two things he could do in order to help the anemia. Two possibilities. Eat bacon and eggs every morning, and that would give you the protein that would help your blood cells. That's what they thought then. Or he could apprentice himself to a Lithuanian farmer and work the land together with the Lithuanian farmer. And the doctor said that would also make him stronger and help his blood cells. Well, for Rav Moshe Chazan, it was a no-brainer. He apprenticed his young son to a Lithuanian peasant farmer. And Yaakov Chazan said he was enamored with this man, because he worked very, very hard from morning to night with this beatific smile on his face that he couldn't imagine. And after a while, he couldn't control himself, and he said to him, "Tell me, you work so hard and the sweat is pouring from your brow. Why are you so happy all the time?" And the farmer said, "Don't you hear the music?" And the young boy said, "What music?" He said, "The music that comes from the earth as you work and the vegetation rises from the land. Don't you hear the music?" Yaakov Chazan said, "I was an impressionable young boy. I bent down, I cupped my ear to the earth, and I said, 'No, I don't hear any music.'" And the farmer looked very perplexed. "You really don't?" And then all of a sudden, he understood. He said, "I know why. Because it's not your land. If it were your land and was giving to you its produce, then you would hear the music." And Yaakov Chazan said then, at that time, he took an oath that as soon as he was old enough, he would come to Eretz Yisrael, he would work the land, and he would hear the music. And he said on the radio program, "And I still work the land, and I do hear the music." Where is there a pasuk that strengthens this point? The music of the land of Israel for the Jewish people? Anybody? Remember when the brothers were sent by Yaakov to give to the grand vizier, who was actually Yosef, to give him fruits of the land? What are the fruits of the land called that the brothers brought to the grand vizier? Zimrat Haaretz, the song of the land. Kedushat Eretz Yisrael is the song of the land, of the produce which comes from. That's the first bracha of the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, as I said, which only gives its produce to the Jewish people. That's Eretz Yisrael. The second bracha is, as we said a few moments ago, Teka b'shofar gadol lecheruteinu, V'san neis t'kabetz k'leyotenu, v'kabitzenu yachad me'arba kanfot ha'aretz, Baruch ato Hashem m'kabetz nidchei amo Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael absorbs the exiles, the Jews, from all over the world, who are scattered all over the world. Eretz Yisrael provides protection. It provides sustenance for the Jews and protection for the Jews. No other land ever truly gave us protection. Maybe America for the longest number of years, but it is now Avhinah Vislach, if you know what I mean. Very vulnerable. And Kerry said it very clearly when, after a few of the outbursts of President Obama, Kerry told the Jewish community in no uncertain terms a number of months ago, for protection you can't depend upon the United States. Said it clearly and openly. So Eretz Yisrael ultimately provides us with produce, provides us with sustenance, provides us with protection, and that is Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. What about Yerushalayim? The bracha of Yerushalayim we know very well, clearly. V'l'Yerushalayim yirecha b'rachamim tashuv. To Jerusalem, your city, with great compassion, shall you return. V'tishkon b'tochach kasher divarta. And dwell in it as you have spoken. U'v'nei otach b'karov b'yameinu b'nyan olam. And build it soon in our time as an eternal building. David and prepare the throne of David quickly. Baruch ato Hashem, Bonei Yerushalayim. So the bracha, which is a difficult bracha, and I'm going to come to it in a short while. But the bracha is a difficult bracha. The bracha speaks about God's return to Jerusalem. The bracha includes another subject, which is Yerushalayim as the seat of kingship, of Malchut. And it's not clear if it's Malchut Beit David or Malchut Hashem. But Yerushalayim has to do with the presence of God in Yerushalayim and has to do with the kingship in Yerushalayim. And the adjunct, the next bracha that deals with Yerushalayim is at Tzemach Tovir Avdecho Mehirat Atzmiach. And that already is Mashiachiyut and the ultimate redemption which will come from Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim is God, is Shekhinah, is divine presence. Very different from physical sustenance. Yerushalayim is Malchut, the Davidic dynasty. And Yerushalayim is ultimately Mashiachiyut and Geula. In simplistic terms, Eretz Yisrael is physical, physical sustenance and physical protection. And Yerushalayim is spiritual, is Shekhinah, is Davidic dynasty Malchut, and is Geula. And for us, redemption, first and foremost, is the spiritual life that we will be able to truly live and enjoy. That's the Rambam's picture as well. And that's really our goal for Yemot HaMashiach, a period in which there's no real competition, everyone has what he needs, and people can dedicate themselves to chesed, to constructive creativity of tikkun olam b'malchut shakai, of perfecting the world in the kingship of God. So that spirituality in the deepest sense, it's spiritualizing the physical and being able to live the kinds of life, the kind of life that we will yearn. Now I'd like to turn to the Rambam. How the Rambam takes these ideas and really what he does with them, which I think is tremendously important. So it's Hilchot Beit HaBechira, Perek Vav, Halacha Tet Zayin, and many practical things I think will come into play as we learn this. Rambam asks an interesting question. V'lama ani omer b'mikdash v'Yerushalayim? Why do I say, as far as the sanctuary and Jerusalem is concerned, shekidushah rishona kidushatan la'atid lavo, that the initial sanctity is an eternal sanctity. The sanctity of Yerushalayim is an eternal sanctity. Uvekidushat sha'ar Eretz Yisrael, but as far as the sanctity of the rest of the land of Israel is concerned, le'inyan shviyit u'masrot v'chayotzei bahen, as far as the sabbatical year is concerned and the tithes are concerned, lo kincha la'atid lavo, the sanctity is not an eternal sanctity. The Rambam says, bigadol, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael was established by Yehoshua and his generation when they came in to live in Eretz Yisrael. That sanctity only lasted until the first exile. After the first exile, the sanctity ended. Unlike the sanctity of Yerushalayim, which is an eternal sanctity. What exactly does this mean? The Rambam goes on. Why is it like that? L'fi shekidushat ha-mikdash v'Yerushalayim v'pnei ha-shechina. Because the sanctity of the sanctuary in Jerusalem is because of the divine presence. Ushchina eina b'teila. God's divine presence can never be nullified. Now those of you who are a little bit into the Rambam and Moreh Nevuchim and the Guide for the Perplexed and everything the Rambam says about idolatry, this sounds very strange. The Rambam says that the divine presence in Yerushalayim can never be nullified. What does he mean? That's Kedushat Yerushalayim. Its sanctity is based upon the Shekhinah, which is there, and specifically there, and it can never be nullified. V'harehu omer, and the Pasuk says, V'hashimoti et mikdashechem, I will destroy your sanctuaries. V'amru chachamim, and our sages say they're still called sanctuaries. Af al pi sheshomamim, even though they are to be destroyed, b'kedushatan hein omdim, they stand on their sanctity. In other words, the sanctity of Yerushalayim is forever, even after the destruction, unlike the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Har HaBayit even if it's destroyed, still has its sanctity, and therefore we must treat Har Habayit with sanctity even today. And it means that the precincts of the Holy Temple, where non-Kohanim were forbidden to tread, and people who were ritually impure were forbidden to tread, that sanctity still exists today. On that basis, halachically, there are many Jews who believe that it's forbidden to go up to Har Habayit, because we don't know exactly where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was, where the Sanctum Sanctorum was, where the holy places were. It's a very large place, the Har Habayit, and it's much larger than the place of the Mikdash, but since we don't know, we cannot go. Rav Gorin believes he knew. He has very clear maps, and there's a great deal of place that you can go up, and there's no problem, at least if you subscribe to his maps. And since I believe my American background bears me in good stead, if you don't use it, you lose it. And one of the worst messages we gave to our Arab friends, in quotation marks, is by not going up to the Temple Mount, demonstrated the fact that we are not really committed to its sanctity. And I think it was very unfortunate. And I try to go up at least once a month. And there are many rabbis, like Rav Shai Yishuv Cohen, for example, from Haifa. We believe very strongly that the maps of Rav Gorin are correct, and that we can go up. Obviously, you go to the mikvah. Obviously, you don't wear leather shoes. You keep to the halachot. But we believe that we may go up, and there are, Baruch Hashem, many, many more people who have been going up during the last even 10 years, and it's very important. I believe it's very, very important. I'll just say two things along these lines, because I do believe it's very important. I have, Baruch Hashem, B'nayin Hara, 17 grandchildren. I have one, my wife and daughter, one grandchild who is willing to do anything that I, you know, whatever ventures he learns. We have a Seder in Moron Avuchim every Motzoi Shabbos because he's of strong philosophical bent. We've learned together all the years, and he's accompanied me on a number of interesting and different and difficult trips. And I took him for the first time to Har Habayit when he was right before Bar Mitzvah. It's a very meaningful place for me, and I feel very, very much Kedusha when I go there. And as we walked, and I showed him exactly where we can go, where we cannot go, and right opposite where, according to Rav Gorin, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was, but a way away from it, I took the keys in my pocket, because we aren't allowed. You know, the Hindus can pray there, and the Buddhists can pray there, and the Muslims can pray there, and the Christians can pray there, but Jews cannot pray. And that was a kind of pact that was made between the secular Jews and Moshe Dayan, on the one hand, and the Haredi Jews that feel you can't go up there because of the sanctity, lest it be defiled. So we gave the keys back to the Waqf, the Palestinian kind of person who was in charge before the Six-Day War, and Jews cannot pray there. Anyway, I took my keys, and I made believe that they fell. And I bowed down to pick up the keys. And I said in the ground, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Liolam Va'ed, blessed be God's glorious kingdom forever and ever. And I stood up and I looked at my grandson with a great deal of pride. I did it. And my grandson, who was then 12 years old, looked at me and said, Saba, you are acting just like a Murano. In secret, you have to say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto L'Olam Va'ed, and I burst out in tears because he was 100% correct. Now I want you to know that very often I apologize to God for Am Yisrael. We're not recognizing the miracle and what has been done for us. One of the examples in which I beg God to forgive us is Nachem. Many years have passed since the Six-Day War. We still say the Nachem prayer as if the legionaries, the Roman legionaries, was still all over Yerushalayim. And in Efrat, I urge all synagogues to change the Nusach, because it's not a true Nusach. And to substitute for Yerushalayim, Har Habayit, the place which is still a place of destruction for Jews, and where we cannot act like the proud owners of Medinat Yisrael, is in Har Habayit. And therefore it's not Ha'ir HaShomema, the desolate city, but it's Ha'har HaShomem, the desolate mountain. And simply, I do it on the authority of Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Shlita, the Rosh Hashiva and Baal Ne'adumim, who was really a gadol b'Torah in the deepest sense of the word. That was his suggestion, and I think it's an excellent one. And that's Har Habayit. And as I said, I think it is important to visit it, and of course to keep the go to the mikveh, no leather shoes, that's the major issue, and to know where to go. And usually, if you're going with a guide, they know exactly. The halacha continues. Aval chiyuv ha'aretz b'shviyit uv'ma'asrot, as far as the obligation of the land is concerned towards the sabbatical year and the tithes, that obligation eino ela mipnei shehu kibush rabin. That obligation comes because the majority of the people of Israel conquered it. V'cheivan shenilkecha ha'aretz mideihem, and once the land of Israel was taken from their hands, batel hakibush, the conquest was nullified. The conquest of the Jewish people, when the nations again took the land of Israel away from us, that nullified the initial sanctity when we first got there. V'niftera min ha-Torah min ha-ma'asrot u min ha-shvi'it. And then came the fact that we no longer are biblically commanded to keep the tithes and to keep the Shemitah year. Shaharei Eina Eretz Yisrael. Because it became no longer the land of Israel. The Rambam maintains, hear me very well, that the land is called Eretz Yisrael because its sanctity is dependent upon the presence of Israel. I would say even the commanding presence of Israel. And the Rambam will say later on, at the end of Hilchot Trumot u'Ma'asrot, the Rambam will say that only when the majority of Jews live in Eretz Yisrael will we be biblically obligated to keep Shemitah, the sabbatical year, and the other things, the various tithes. We try very hard to keep them today, but it is rabbinical and not biblical. Very soon, the majority of the people will be living in Eretz Yisrael. That's for another shiur, for another time. There are those who say that it depends upon the tribes also coming back. It's a big discussion, long discussion, and it's soon going to be very relevant. Because Baruch Hashem, the largest Jewish community, there are 6 million Jews now living in Israel. Maybe there are 13 million Jews in the world, but there aren't 13 million halachic Jews in the world. There were probably less than 11 million halachic Jews in the world, maybe even less than 10 million. So therefore, it could be that that time is already upon us. But as I said, another shiur, another time. Let's go on with the Rambam because he's very important. V'cheivan sha'ala Ezra l'kitsha, when Ezra returned to Israel, lo kitsha b'kibush, he didn't sanctify Israel when he returned to the land after the Babylonian exile by conquest. Ela b'chazaka shehechazikupa. But because he had a presumption of ownership, he returned to those places in Israel because we knew that Eretz Yisrael was ours and therefore we were going back to our land. Lefichach kol makom shechziku bo olei bavel v'nitkadesh b'kedushat Ezra Hashniya, every place which originally had been taken over by those who originally came with Ezra and returned, Harehu Mekudash Hayom. It is holy today. Va'afal pi shenilkacha ha'aretz mimenu. Even though the land had been taken away from us. Listen very well to what the Rambam says. I want you to hear me well, and then you'll understand why it's so important for us to continue the settlement. And why the Palestinian argument is because they understand very much what the Rambam says. Very, very well. The Rambam says as follows. There is an eternal sanctity to Yerushalayim because that's the sanctity of the Spirit of the Shekhinah, and the Spirit and the Shekhinah can never be nullified. There is a sanctity to the land, in addition to the sanctity of Yerushalayim, separate from the sanctity of Yerushalayim. And that's because the Jews conquered the land, lived in the land, worked the land, ate the produce of the land, and benefited from the protection of the land. Once the Jews were forced to leave the land, that sanctity was nullified. However, adds the Rambam, and this is very, very much of a great Chiddush of the Rambam. However, adds the Rambam, when Jews returned to the land after they had been evacuated from the land, pushed off from the land, and they returned on the basis of the presumption that this was the land that God gave us, so our exile from the land was only temporary. Do all of those lands that the Jews returned under Ezra, those lands assume eternal Kiddusha? Let me give you an example of what the Rambam means. You know the seven nations who used to live in Israel? The Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, the Jebusites. How many of you have visited Israel? Visited Israel, ever? Overwhelming majority. Has anybody seen an Amorite or a Jebusite? You see an Ethiopian. You see B'nai Menashe from India. Jews. But you see Jebusites. In the history of the world, when people are kicked off their land, they don't come back to the land. And they disappear from history. The Jews are the only exception. And the Rambam says, when the Jews returned to the lands to which they returned, and they returned not on the basis of a new conquest, they returned on the basis of the fact that this is the land that God gave us, those lands assume eternal sanctity. The Sefer HaKrumot says very clearly that that means whenever they return, in whatever era, when Jews return, they endow the land with eternal sanctity. Which means that when we settle the Efrat and Gush Etzion, we endowed that land with eternal sanctity. Because we came back on the basis of the presumption that this is the land that God gave us for all eternity. That's why the settlement movement was so significant and remains so significant. The wall of the lands that we return, it's a statement, and it's true, it is a statement. That's 100% correct. And that's what the Gentiles keep on telling you. You don't have any historical relationship to the land. There was never Mahmoud Abbas, the moderate, according to the President of the United States, says there was never a holy temple in Jerusalem. I was once on television with an imam from Egypt, and I was talking about our right to the Temple Mount. And the imam said, on World Television, Roim Olam, a very big program, Motzei Shabbat, Saturday night, 9 o'clock at night, everybody watches it. And the imam said, Rabbi Riskin, everyone knows that Al-Aqsa Mosque was there before Abraham was born. I mean, historically, the whole business of Islam is from the 7th, 8th century. Abraham is 3,500 years ago, more, close to 4,000 years ago. So what are we talking about? But they say it, they don't want us to have that continuity. That continuity establishes eternal sanctity. That's why the settlement movement is so significant. What we're saying is, We are the eternal owners. We may be temporarily ejected, but it was given by God, promised by God, and ultimately we will retake our inheritance. So that's the importance of the settler Zionism, I think tremendous importance. So that's the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, and wherever people came to settle again, it achieves that kind of eternal sanctity, which is of great, great significance. Which is of great significance. Now I want to say one more thing about the sanctity of Yerushalayim. The sanctity of Yerushalayim I defined as being spiritual, and it is spiritual. It is also universal. And this is something I want you to understand. And this is why it is so important. It's what our return to Zion is all about. And it's what the mission of Israel is all about. And it's with this that I'd like to conclude. You see, why be Jewish? And what is really the goal of the Jewish people? And what is really the dream of Zionism? From one perspective, the Jews are entitled to a homeland which will give them sustenance and protection. Very simple. The law of return in Israel today, because between 1939 and 1945, 6 million Jews were murdered because no place would give them a safe haven, not even America. My grandmother, Zichrona Livracha, became a tzitzin because she loved President Rosenfeld, Azar Feinemensch, Abu Zainayid Rosenfeld. And she called him Rosenfeld. But he wasn't such a nice guy. He was an anti-Semite, we know now, and didn't even bring in the numerous Klausis that he could have brought in during those years. He made a deal with Saudi Arabia and King Faisal. He didn't want the Jews to come to America. So the only country that really has given us true safe haven is the land of Israel. So that's one function. But let's go back to Avraham Avinu. Bereshit, Yud Bet, Sukkim Bet V'Gimel. God says to Abraham, "V'eschal l'goy gadol, I will make you a great nation. V'nivrachu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adamah." Not so that you will have physical sustenance. Not so that you will be able to hear the music coming up from the air, from the land. But so that you will be able to bring blessing to all the families of the earth. And what is this blessing? So in Bereshit, Perek Yud Chet, Psukim Yud Chet V'Yud Tet, the Torah tells me what this blessing is. Avraham Hayo Yihyeh L'Goy Atzum V'Rav, Abraham will become a very mighty and powerful nation. Ki Dativ, because I have known, loved, and chosen Abraham. L'man Hashem Yitzaveh et banav et beito achrav, because he is commanding his household and his children after him. L'shmor derech Hashem, to observe the pathways of the God of love. L'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, to bring to the world acts of compassionate righteousness and moral justice. The rainbow teaches us. It's a half image. God promises He will not destroy the world. But He can't promise that the world will not destroy itself. That's the existential danger of Iran. The world may well destroy itself. Unless Israel succeeds in teaching the world tzedakah u'mishpat, compassionate righteousness and moral justice, the seven laws of the Bnei Noach, the universal laws of morality, that's our task in the world. And from the election of Abraham, where God says this very clearly, that's the purpose of the Jewish nation. Going all the way down in time to Yirmiyahu, who presaged the destruction and the rebirth. In Yirmiyahu Peretet, we read it on Tisha B'Av, Al Yitalel Yibor B'Gvurato, don't praise the strong man for his strength, the rich man for his riches, the powerful man for his power, but Bizot Mitalel HaYitalel, this is what the one who must be praised should be praised for. Haskel V'Yadoa Oti, learn and come to know me, God says. La'asot tzedakah u'mishpat ba'aretz, to do acts of loving kindness, compassionate righteousness, and moral justice on earth. Bezot ani chafatzti, this is what I want. That's why we're a nation. And that's the universal message of Yerushalayim. What do we want to make the Mikdash for? Certainly not for the sacrifices. Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook says that in the third Beit HaMikdash, he says it in Olat Re'iyah, V'yarvol Hashem Minchat Yehuda, that at the time of the third commonwealth, there is not going to be animal sacrifices. It's inconceivable, he says, that the prophet would say, Lo yareyu v'lo yashchitu b'chol har kodshi, there will be no destruction in the entire mountain of my holiness, and we're going to destroy animals. There are going to be only meal sacrifices. So what's the real purpose of the Beit HaMikdash? Yeshayahu Bet. Micha. 5. Zechayahu. Zayin Chetet. V'naru elav kol ha'amim. All of the nations will come. Rush into the temple. Nelcha ba'orchotav, let us go in accordance with the ways of the Jews. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah u'dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. From Zion must come forth Torah and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, at least the moral Torah, tzedakah u'mishpat. V'chitetu harvotam li'itim v'chanitoteihem l'mazmerot, they'll beat their swords into plowshares, their prunes into their spears into pruning hooks. Lo yisa goyel goy cherev, lo yilvedu od mechama. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. Humankind will not learn war anymore. Yerushalayim means the city of peace. The city where everyone understands that every human being is created in the image of the divine. Kedushat Eretz Yisrael is national and physical. Yerushalayim is universal and spiritual. Yerushalayim is involved not only with Israel, Eretz Yisrael, but with the God of the world and humanity. That's why I was so proud of the Prime Minister of Israel when he stood before the American Congress and explained why we dare not allow Iran to become nuclear. Because that would be a game changer, and that's the end of a dream of a world of peace. This is really the Jewish mission. This is really the Zionist mission. This is Kiddushat Yerushalayim. So there are two Kiddushot, and both very important. We have to first become a nation in order to become a Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, a holy nation and a kingdom of priest teachers to all the other nations. And the fundamental message of our teachings is a message of peace. That's the mission of Israel. And the world depends upon the Jewish people becoming a holy people and having the capacity to teach the world the message of Torah and peace. Thank you very much.
If there are any questions, I'm sure everything is clear, but still might be questions. We thank our Rabbi very much for taking the time to be with us. And again, thank you for doing this forever.
Questions, I'll be glad to. Yes?
I think everybody would be interested to go up to Har Habayit for several reasons. A, curiosity. B, perhaps feel a little more spiritual connection. And to express their sovereignty. However, if someone who is inappropriate to enter to the Beis HaMikdash enters with severe penalties, I tend to doubt that Rav Goren had divine nevuah when he created the maps, and there certainly is the possibility that he is incorrect in his assessments, and then we are subject to quite severe penalties for going up there. As a separate side issue, I would direct to Rabbi Hopper the question. If we start accepting the opinions of Rav Goren, should we also accept his opinion that Jews coming to Eretz Yisrael should keep one day under for? And should we pick and choose rabbinic authority statements? Because Rav Goren's classic, I recall a fascinating statement, he says, do not bring Golus to Eretz Yisrael.
You're asking, I don't know, the right person or the wrong person. You may decide you're asking the wrong person. Number one, Rav Goren bases what he says on Masechet Midot Barosh Uvarishona. The Mishnayot are pretty clear as to what the boundaries are. And listen, that's what Halacha is all about. We give the Gedolei Torah and each generation the ability to interpret. And Rav Goren, at least in my opinion, was a Gaon. He does not need my Haskama, certainly. You can decide. You're not taking any chances. Okay? I think for the sake of Kedusha, Aseh L'Chorav. At least that's my position. Secondly, I stand four square with Beit Midrasho Shel Brisk and the Chacham Tzvi. Anybody who keeps 2 days Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael is making brachot levatala. And therefore should not do it. A second Seder with brachot is brachot levatala. According to many Rishonim, as you know, lo tisa shem Hashem Elokecha lashav. Minek avoteinu biyadeinu. That's the Gemara in Masechet Peitza, beginning Gimel Dalet, in Masechet Peitza. And there was never a minhag of Yom Tov Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. Now, you want to keep the safe side. I see you're, that's your mentality. You want to keep the safe side. And I understand it and I respect it. Day and a half. You know what the day and a half is? That you don't do melechot on the second day, but no brachot. No expression of kedushat yom tov. It's a bracha levatola. All of a sudden, the Fermi world has taken on this notion. I feel it. When I'm in Yerushalayim, I look at the Jews from Galut looking at me askance. Because I'm writing or whatever. Absurd. Absolutely absurd. And it's not true, the more machmir you are, the more spiritual you are. I agree, don't bring galut into Medinat Israel. Bring kedushat Eretz Israel into the galut. If you happen to be in Eretz Israel from the galut. That would be my response. Any other questions? You see at least that I don't, I feel strongly about my positions, whatever they may be. Yes.
With the reality of what's in Israel going on in Israel today, vis-a-vis the Arabs and the rest of the world with the territories, and with your position, can you project 20 years from now what's going to be?
My dear friend, the Gemara says that Nevuah was given over.
No, it's true.
I hope I don't qualify. I'm not a child. You know, I've reached the age of 75, so I guess Baruch Hashem, I'm not a child, and I hope I'm not a fool. So you're asking me to prophesy. I cannot prophesy. Pardon? Opinion? So good. It's good now. It will be much, much better. And if you all would come to Eretz Israel, it would be even better still. Because that is what will make Eretz Israel strong. That's what I believe. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming. If you want to know my piskei halacha, you can find out tomorrow.